You are listening to episode number 163 of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast.
Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream. Make him the cutest that I've ever seen. Give him two lips like roses and clover. Then tell him that his lonesome nights are over. Sandman, I'm so alone. Don't have nobody to call my own. Please turn on your magic beam. Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream.
Midgets Wrestling, and you are listening to episode number 163 of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. As always, and forever will be, I am your host, Iggy, a.k.a. Ben. Joining me, as always, from the great state of Massachusetts, Mr. Brian Powers. Brian?
What's up, Ben?
Nothing much. Joining me also from the great state of Oklahoma, Mr. Jonathan Cutright. Jonathan, welcome once again.
Well, thank you, and I hope everybody had a good Easter, and hope we can keep Taser awake tonight.
And, of course, joining us from the land of Dreamyland, Miss Taser. Taser, welcome to the show. And he's already gone.
Mr. Sandman.
Bring me a dream.
Love that song. That's what happens when you watch a hip-hop
porn. What? Huh?
Wake up, old man. Wake up, old man.
Wake up, Taser.
Yes, we're...
Huh?
Somebody forgot to take their pills.
Who's this? Brandon West?
Well, in case you're listening you are listening to this for the very first time. We are the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. No, we are not a Thor podcast. We are a podcast dedicated to all things Marvel related. That means comics, movies, TV shows, video games, and so much more.
In certain cases, court cases.
Yes, but we will not. Way to go. Way to fucking go. See what I have to work with here, people. Insubordination of the ass.
To me. Way to singer it, Brian. Way to singer it.
Does anybody want to go to Hawaii?
Are you going to get me a role in a movie, Taser?
You can be a star.
God damn it.
I have a video camcorder right over here. Hey, where's the lube?
Got it. Anyways, horrible jokes aside, let's kick it off right into the first piece of news. I'm pushing on. Brian, what's our first news on this?
Was it smooth?
Push. Portrait words. Moving forward, Brian.
Okay, so Days of Future Past, the final trailer just recently dropped this past week, featured, among other things, more of a look at Quicksilver in action. We got a look at a young Charles Xavier up and about, walking like no big thing. We saw some more Wolverine first meeting with the professor. And we got more of a look at Sentinels, both them in the past and in the present. Couple that with the 1 minute of footage that was dropped during the MTV Movie Awards, which showed a bit more of the fight part happening between the Sentinels and the X-Men. And you got a decent idea of what this movie's probably shaping up to be.
You know what? I noticed that they used the cliche trailer music in the middle part. You know, the sort of rally music or whatever. I don't fucking know. Interesting.
The cliche would be like, in a world.
Well, he died, didn't he? I think he died.
Yeah, he just died.
Yeah, you can't do that anymore.
They should get David Hayter do it.
In a world.
Then he gets fired because whatever.
Because it brings up Metal Gear in every trailer.
Yeah. In a world where Metal Gear... Wrong movie, David. Oh, I'm sorry. He doesn't even talk like that in real life. just a voice. Anyways, so I like that Hugh Jackman is basically... You know, and it's so horrible because of what Sam Jackson did. But he's basically the Nick Fury for the X-Men. I'm here to recruit you. It's also noticeable that apparently the X-Men have disbanded at the end of something.
Yeah, that part was a little startling, too.
Because, you know, it seems like everything was hunky-dory at the end of X-Men, you know, besides Charles Xavier ending up in a wheelchair. But even then, he was like, we'll call them X-Men, you know?
It's a brave new world.
Some brave new world.
Now Charlie Xavier looks more like Charlie Manson.
Yeah, so that leads to me something happened. Because Magneto was clearly, and Magneto's in jail. So that means something happens in between where First Class ends, Magneto's in jail, Xavier walks, the X-Men get disbanded for the first time in that team's history.
If I may, Ben?
Yeah.
I believe him being in prison was due to the whole bent bullet thing, the whole JFK idea.
So this is something that's going to happen in the movie?
I don't think so. I think it's just they're going to talk about it. I don't think they're really going to show it, but I think it's a reference, a callback to that. Which, if you're listening and you don't know, there was a the original inception for the idea of the follow-up to First Class was that Magneto, angered that the U.S. government denied the mutant contributions to ending the Cuban Missile Crisis, used a bullet to assassinate President John F. Kennedy. Subsequently, a viral video was released detailing how he was arrested and a secret trial was convened wherein he was found guilty of murder and thus imprisoned. So I think that's what we'll be seeing with that. Yeah, there was a whole full historical... No, you idiots. No, it's a viral video set in the present day about it's like a faux historical documentary type thing.
Well, considering if you've ever seen any reaction videos to JFK being shot, you know how much of an important stunt man was. So it's not inconceivable. That would happen.
That a viral video would get released.
Not that you're that's old man that's coming into play right now.
What's this viral video?
But you know,
my back is hurt.
One, it looks like they're playing up the action. This is clear. This is what I like to call the Avengers effect, where the action just has to get bigger and bigger and bigger for these superhero movies. And let's be honest, as much as I like X-Men 1 and 2. They're pretty, you know, the action isn't the greatest. You know, there's some nice fight scenes, but it's pretty on a lower scale, you know, despite that the X-Men in the comics does something big. But it's pretty, you're not going to see, you didn't see buildings explode in the first two X-Men. You saw a car explode and, you know.
And you had flooding.
You had flooding, which was cool and very scary for me because that's a nightmare I have. And of course, the movie we did not wish to talk about, The Last Stand. It was always the biggest of the original trilogy, but even then, comparing it to, say, you know, The Avengers or Man of Steel or even, you know, some of these other movies or Hulk even, you know, the destruction level was pretty tame. Here, you know, Jackman pretty much says that they started targeting Sentinels and then they, you know,
Sentinels started targeting mutants, and they started targeting everybody.
Yeah, like, hey, things got out of hand. What do you want me to say?
You were built by a midget. Oh, dumb.
Kill everyone who's over 5 feet tall, and then they'll see.
This doesn't look right.
But this is clearly the biggest budget, it's going to be the most action-packed X-Men movie yet, and I think it's going to be the X-Men movie people have been wanting to see. You know, obviously we got more clips of saw more of Colossus fighting Sentinels and Iceman, and of course Magneto taking down the is that supposed to be San Francisco? What is that? What stadium was that? It looked familiar. I couldn't tell what it was though.
Yankee Stadium.
I don't think it's Yankee Stadium.
Like the 70, I don't know.
The color scheme was all
it's
off.
It's Fenway Park.
No, there was no green. I don't know, but if you know what stadium that is, please let us know. That's my thoughts. This is going to be big. This is clearly a result of the Avengers effect, where you have to make everything bigger when you get all these characters together, especially with the X-Men when they're always together, except for Wolverine, who does whatever the fuck he wants. So I'll leave it up to you guys. I like the trailer, and I just can't get more excited for this movie.
I will say that I do agree with you, Ben, that it appears to be shaping up to be a much more action-packed movie. In terms of the scale of it, though, especially in the future, there seems to be... what we've seen of the future battles with the X-Men appears to be sort of the last-ditch effort, so I'm not sure how that'll play out in the theater, but... the inclusion of Quicksilver, a bit more backstory on him, is intriguing. He still looks god-awful, but, you know, at least we know slightly more about him. And he doesn't appear to have any connection to Magneto, none that I can discern from the trailer. I don't know if that was intentional or what. I mean, this is the one franchise where you can connect the two because, you know, Fox owns the X-Men, but it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, their connection. Oh, and I will say that Hugh Jackman calling Jennifer Lawrence a cold-hearted bitch just... beautiful, and made the whole trailer for me. As did the scene wherein Bobby Drake is on the ice sled and he's, you know, freezing up a Sentinel, and the thing just heats up, breaks loose, and grabs him by the neck like he's a freaking pro wrestler or something. Just Bobby Drake, you need to shape up, man.
Yeah, he gave you a boner, didn't he?
you know, the Sentinel or Bobby Drake?
Both of them.
Gave me blue balls. Oh!
Okay, thanks, Mr. Folks. Singer.
I'll be here after that. Oh, shit. Oh, good lord. So, I guess we'll see how this whole thing plays out. I'm definitely excited for it. It looks to be really, really good. No, I think that about sums up my feelings. I don't think I can really think anymore now with all this Bryan Singer talk being background. Shit.
Control yourself, Taser, and tell your thoughts on the trailer.
Control yourself.
I
wanted
to see the movie, so this trailer didn't really, you know, do anything for me. I'm going to see the movie. You know, it already has my money. The fact that I'm here right now simply means that my spot in front of the movie theater is being taken up by somebody else. You know, there's nothing else to be said about this trailer other than, oh, look, more stuff that I'm looking forward to seeing. You know, I'm there. You know, I'm there, and I'm still looking forward to Storm getting one-shotted. Yes.
You really hate the Nubian, don't you?
Hey, look, sometimes the Nubian gets to love, and sometimes she just needs to get KTFO'd. All right, and that's, you know, anything that removes her from the screen, or at least lets her do something interesting, other than watch as I stand here and my eyes glow white and I call on something and something happens. And that's like the sum total of my...
They should have had her done it like in the 90s anime where they have her say something ridiculous. I call upon the winds of the world or some shit like that.
Nah, you know what that is? That's that Japanese bullshit where they call out every move that they make.
But that's awesome. But that's awesome.
Tension.
Lightning call. You know, whatever.
Dude, flaming penis. What?
Something. I just want her to do something and not, you know, have to have a whole 20-second build-up to her doing something.
Take some time to build up an electrical storm.
Whatever. You know, I want her to do something. You know, maybe she can take her top off and then everybody goes, oh, look, Nubian boobies. All right.
Yeah, but even then, Jennifer Lawrence is in there and, like, Ellen Page is in there.
If I had to choose between Jennifer Lawrence and Halle Berry, which one do you think I would pick?
You would pick Bryan Singer.
Yes, indeed. Because he's so snackalicious.
And he would pick you, whether you wanted to or not.
He could pick me any day.
Oh, we're going to give Ben an aneurysm before this show is over, folks. I guarantee it.
What do we do wrong?
Nothing. Nothing at all.
No.
Proceed.
But no.
I brought to you by Wesson Oil.
Okay, this took a turn for the worse.
It makes everything go easier.
It was only supposed to be about X-Men, and then, fuck. Finish your thought, damn it.
That is what you want.
No, but, all right, to rein it in, which is weird coming from me, two snaps.
Yeah,
no,
shit.
No, I'm just saying, I'm there. You know, this didn't do anything to make me want to see it more. I'm already at maxed want to see it, you know? There's nothing else to be said.
Jonathan.
Okay, I promise to be on my best behavior. I'm looking forward to this as much as anybody else is. I'm the only thing that would make me happier when I see it in the theater. People are going to look at me like I'm at WWE Raw when Storm gets it through the back, and I come up and I start doing the yes movement for, you know, like Daniel Bryan, and I'll be like, yes, 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 because people just don't seem to understand the hatred I have for that version of the character, and she is one of my favorite X-Men, and just knowing that she, if she gets anything remotely like she got in the comic version, I'm going to be like, hey, hey. And I just, but otherwise, really not much else to, I'm there. It's, you know, like Taser said, my money is going to be going to see the movie. The only other highlight I'll be looking forward to is Peter Dinklage with the porn stash. You know, big Game of Thrones fan. That's the only thing that was missing from his character in there. He's going to be doing it in the X-Men.
And that's his nickname for my cock, if you know what I mean.
The only thing I might bitch about is the way they've got the Sentinels looking like GoBots. And
I'll agree with him.
I mean, I hate
the Bayformers. You don't like that?
Okay, the Bayformers still look better than these guys do. So from what I see, and you know, at least they are remotely resembling the characters they were supposed to be for the most part. But otherwise, I'm going to wait. I'll wait and see because I love First Class. I want to see the group, you know, in there again. I want to see Sir Ian McKellen at least one more time as Magneto. And obviously Patrick Stewart one more time as Xavier. They've got my money. And I'd kind of like to see what their whole thing is with this other thing that we'll be talking about here in a minute. But that's about all I can say. And
so there you go.
Before I slip into something else, let's go on.
So there you go.
That is what he will say.
Hey, hey.
You're all fired. You're all fired.
Well, I slip it to something more comfortable.
Yes, join next week for Ben, Johnny, and Arnold as they revive the Warriors 3 post-fire.
Now rebooted.
Moving on.
Spider-Man.
Can we talk about Spider-Man, please?
So,
hey,
Spider-Man.
My spot.
Yeah. Okay, so early last week, just after the initial recording of our show previously, there was news surfacing that the Amazing Spider-Man 2 theatrical release in parts of the world would have a after-credits scene. Not really a surprise, given the nature of comic book films as of late, but the real surprise was that this scene was supposedly concerning the X-Men, that is, the one shown in Days of Future Past. Eventually, this report, this rumor, developed into learning that due to a deal Mark Webb had had previously with Fox Studios, in order to sort of close out the deal or what have you, Fox sort of said, tell you what, we'll let you go out of contract if you give us a little bit of free publicity. And so, as it turns out, the scene at the end of Amazing Spider-Man 2 will only turn out to be just some stuff directly out of Days of Future Past. And, of course, this got people initially talking in the interim about, you know, what if they cross over with X-Men, what if they cross over with Fantastic Four, what were the possibilities here. And then recently an interview was conducted with Matt Tolmach and Avi Arad. Now, Avi Arad, as Ben mentioned before the show, is the man responsible for bringing Spider-Man to Sony, bringing the X-Men, Fantastic Four to Fox. He's that guy who created these Marvel movies before there really was an MCU, you know? And in the interview, he said that Spider-Man teaming up with Marvel's Avengers wouldn't be a stunt that isn't necessary until, quote, we've run out of ideas, end quote. And so they're pretty much nixing any possibility of any crossover with Spider-Man and with any other franchise until they're fresh out of ideas, which, as we all know, is just basically a way of them saying, we're not going to crossover anytime soon. And that's where Spider-Man's crossover probabilities find ourselves.
Here is where I go into full-on stupidity mode.
Ben?
You're better. Fucking want to make a Sinister Six movie and a Venom movie with Carnage as the villain. You fucking ran out of ideas 3 months ago, assholes. Okay, look, you ain't got shit with Spider-Man. You can only do so much with him. This is another thing to the Avengers effect. They want to pump these bad boys out every year. I get that. However, you just lost Ghost Rider, and even then it wasn't doing that anyways. But
Nick Cage and Andrew Garfield this summer in Hell on Wheels.
You know, if it was finally, it was mildly entertaining, I would go see that movie.
That was a fun movie.
What, Ghost Rider?
Hell on Wheels.
Oh, never seen it.
With Nick Cage and the blonde chick.
Whatever. So I get that you look to say that you run out. You run out of ideas when you started throwing around the idea of Sinister Six movies, Sinister Six spinoffs, and of course Venom getting his own movie along with Carnage. To me, you ran out of fucking ideas. You can only do so much with the minutiae of Spider-Man. Granted, he has a large pool to draw from, but none of those characters, at least to me, can stand on their own. You can make an argument for some of them. Their main purpose is to basically benefit the development of Peter Parker as a character. And to have them off on their own just isn't interesting in terms of a two-hour big-budget movie. Because let's face it, nobody wants to go to the movie and see Vulture, Doc Ock, Rhino, give me three more, Shocker, Electro...
Vulture.
Whatever. Nobody wants to see those
Mysterio.
Guys.
Mysterio.
There you go. Yeah, I forgot Mysterio.
Mysterio.
Nobody wants to see those guys as leading roles. Nobody does. You're weird. They want to see Spider-Man. They want to see Spider-Man kick their asses, or at least have Spider-Man. Whatever. They don't want to see a two-hour movie dedicated to just them. They want the focus to be on Spider-Man. So, to me. When you see every motherfucking, you know, you see Disney over there with their little Marvel Cinematic Universe, and you see when you see them with their universe and intertwining and how clever it is, and then you see Fox attending to the same thing with the Fantastic Four reboot, as well as X-Men Days of Future, and as well as the X-Men recently with the Wolverine movie, because it's only a recent thing they started doing it. You know, they want a piece of that pie. To me, if I'm a movie executive, cut the motherfucking check with Fox, because you're not going to do it with Disney. Cut the motherfucking check. Let's do some cross-promotional shit. Let's do it. It'll benefit both of us. Find a way to split the royalties, whatever. Pay the fucking check. Get Spider-Man teaming with the Fantastic Four, because good Lord knows I want that. Get Spider-Man with the X-Men. Lord knows I want that. And, of course, Fox doesn't have to do anything, because they just have to have the Fantastic Four and the X-Men and me. Get working on that shit. That's Spider-Man on his own. Spider-Man's Rogues Gallery on his own cannot stand as its own franchise. It just can't. You cannot I don't think you could. People would get overexhausted if it's constantly Spider-Man villain after Spider-Man villain. The Avengers have the difference in that it's not just the Avengers. It's Thor has his own thing. Cap has his own thing. Iron Man has his own thing. Hulk, whenever they get to a Hulk movie, has his own thing. Now they're doing Guardians of the Galaxy, too much to take as dismay. They have their own different things going on, and they eventually meet up. Whereas Spider-Man, largely it's all going to tie into the Spider-Man thing. I don't know how you can do a Sinister Six movie or a villain movie that's not centered on Spider-Man. Because I don't know of any other heroes they have under license. I don't. So yeah, sign the fucking deal. Avi-Rod, don't be stupid. You ran out of ideas when you started pitching around the idea of a Sinister Six movie. Just cut the check. Just to quote Johnny V, cut that check. Cut that check. I'm done. Fuck this.
Fuck. Okay. in case you can't tell, like, Ben has...
Wait, hold on. Was that rant too long? Because I want to abide by, such rules of negative rants. Wes, when you hear this, please let me know, was that proper length? Because I want to, try to get in line with that. Just wanted to put
we
that
We can't
out there.
Do this without your input, West. We need you. We need you like Brian Singer needs an underage boy.
Really? You had to go there? Really? God fucking... God damn it. Move on. Talk about the fucking crossover to potential...
I thought it was a crossover.
Okay, so in case you can't tell, Ben has a little bit of resentment towards Avi-Rod. I'm not sure if it's personal beef or what, but I'll say this. The
guy spilled coffee on me. That's what happened.
The fact that they're not considering any sort of cross-promotional stuff is first of all, it's just stupid because people want to see their heroes team up with other heroes. The Avengers proved that. The continued success of the Marvel Cinematic Universe proves that. And true, given the right hero and property, there is a lot of stuff that can be done in-universe. But it's just, not only is it stupid to not want to cross over with anybody, it's limiting. Because then you take out all the cool banter, all the relationships that could come of that. I mean, it's just... Spider-Man alone has a cool sort of relationship with Wolverine, you know, that they got the whole, oh, he's naive, but he's too gruff, and then there was that whole Kitty Pryde thing. Was Kitty Pryde a thing in the mainstream Marvel Universe, or was that just Ultimate?
No, that was Spider-Man. Just Ultimate.
Okay, well, Ultimate. It could still be done, I guess. And, you know, the whole thing where Spider-Man is... He's the guy that is in New York, and everybody... I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to say here. Spider-Man is the guy who can team up with virtually anybody, and it can be a fun crossover, you know? Spider-Man is the guy who quips during battle. He's the guy that, you know, pokes fun at Wolverine and gets away with it. And he's the guy that gets the semi-attractive girls. I mean, he gets a good amount of women, and Kitty Pryde is among them.
Semi? And have you seen Mary Jane and Gwen Stacy? Semi,
I know.
My ass.
I'm just saying. Look, Peter Parker has a ton of potential as a character by branching him out. And I'm not even going into detail on the whole thing with him in the Fantastic Four. You know, he joined the Future Foundation, people. He was there. So... not even just this one, but just in any other franchise, to not want to cross over is just silly. And I understand where they're coming from. They want to stand on their own. They want to be that strong, independent franchise that don't need no man. But, as it turns out, the studios aren't the one that buys tickets. The fans are the ones that buy tickets. The fans are the ones that decide what's popular and what's not. And the fans would love more than anything to see a crossover occur. Now, that doesn't have to happen right away, I guess. I mean... this is only the second movie in the franchise with Andrew Garfield under the mask, so I guess they don't want to rush into anything. I would assume that's at least part of the reasoning behind that, but it bugs me that Avi would say that until we run out of ideas, because that's just a slap in the face to fans who want to see this happen. And that, as a fanboy, that disappoints me greatly. But, again, I really have no strong feelings one way or the other on Spider-Man himself, so that's all I gotta say.
That's because you're a communist a-hole. Taser, take it away.
What about an a-hole?
Ooh. It's in Hawaii. Anyway, I agree with Bri-Bri on this. I have to disagree with you, Ig, because if Batman can survive as long as he has just by being Batman and fighting pretty much like one villain per movie, then Spider-Man has a large enough rogues gallery that they could continuously put out Spider-Man movies with him versus whatever flavor of villain they decide to dig up or reuse for whatever reboot. And I think it'll mostly get the job done.
Not the argument now, I was saying. What I said was Sinister Six movies, seeing that yearly, movies not about Spider-Man.
Yeah, but that would be a one shot. Nobody's trying to say that, you know, a Sinister
that's
just Six
the idea is that's what they want to do.
I didn't get that at all. I think that's how you were looking at it from your position. I didn't see that's what they were intending. Not from that article anyway.
All in right. Previous articles, I've seen them say that they want to pump out Spider-Man's yearly Spider-Man-S tie-in movies yearly. That's what I've seen.
Well, I'll say this: I think at least one Sinister Six movie could be interesting, depending on how they do it. I think that if we can have movies where the villain is the one that, you know, we look forward to seeing get taken down, you know, like Dracula was, you know, back in the day, Dracula was a big part of the movie, not just necessarily the guy who showed up, did something, and then everybody else ran around trying to catch him. You know, he was a character. A Sinister Six movie might be interesting enough to see if they can pull it off. I'll grant you it's tricky. You know, yes, Spider-Man won't Peter Parker might not necessarily get all of the screen time, and we won't necessarily get to see all of the relationship foibles and, you know, all the other bullshit that everybody else loves that I personally can't stand. But I think it would be an interesting attempt. All right, at least once. All right, at least once. I honestly wouldn't mind having more than one villain per movie, because not every villain that we have that you know, not every villain in Spider-Man or, you know, Batman's roster is solo worthy. You know what I mean? They're not all that big. Like, Mysterio would not be, you know, the big villain for a movie. Mysterio might be mid. You know, he might be working for somebody else, but that would be fine. You know, like, if they ever decide to put Kingpin in Spider-Man's sphere of characters, okay, that might actually be something interesting. Or, you know, God forbid, who knows, make Mysterio the big guy and he has a Hobgoblin shows up or some crap like that. That, I think that would be interesting. Not just a solo villain. I think that actually kind of hurts Spider-Man, in my opinion. Beyond that, I basically agree with that. I agree with Bri-Bri. You know, his position is mine. He just said it first.
All I'm saying is that this is, again, like I said, it's the Avengers effect, and that they want to pump, they want to keep up. They've stated in interviews
prior to this. No, I understand I understand that.
From my position, seeing a Sinister Six movie even once would not be a good idea. And that, to me, is scraping the bottom of the barrel and trying to keep up. And even, you know, the distinguished competition is trying to do that now with Man of Steel 2. You know, so...
Really? You honestly think that Sinister Six movie would be a bad idea?
I think so. I don't think they can execute it well.
To have a movie...
What's the objective? What am I supposed to do? They're bad guys. They're notorious. They're evil.
We're talking about bad guys who are running a city. You know, we're talking about something where we actually get to see Peter Parker beat down.
Who says Peter Parker's going to be in the movie?
Go home.
Do we know he's in the movie?
I'm saying if they were to do. I don't know.
I'm talking about a movie centered just around them with no Spider-Man. That's what I've been hearing.
Nah, I don't see that at all.
That's what I've been hearing about. And different spinoffs with different villains. Obviously, we've heard the Venom spinoff.
Well, with Venom is going to be like the anti-hero, you know? So I don't think you'll have, you know, carnivorous, I want to eat people's heads because it tastes crunchy. I don't think they'll give us that Venom. I think Venom will probably be somebody who acts like, what's his name? Kane, you know, where he's like, you know, kind of dispassionate, leave me alone, but ends up being pulled in and getting involved in doing this, that, and the other. Mm-hmm. I think that's what they will do because,
My whole point, though, is basically they're already scraping the bottom barrel when they're teasing villain spinoffs just to keep up with this yearly movie cycle instead of every...
Because look at what we've got. We've had, this will be the fifth Spider-Man movie. And we've already had two Green Goblins, you know.
That's not what I'm talking about, though. What I'm talking about in terms of them trying to keep up with what Avengers are doing and what Disney's doing and what Fox is just trying to do. That's what I'm talking about. And they don't have – in terms of doing Spider-Man movies, I'll see them as long as they're just Amazing Spider-Man.
If they try
and attempt to do – you know, villain spinoffs and that kind of stuff with the limited character roster they have, it's not going to work out in the long run. It just won't.
Well, I don't think if they do a Venom movie, I don't think Venom will be the bad guy. You know, I think Venom will end up being, like I said, he'll be the anti-hero. You know, I don't think they'll do like a Doc Ock versus Green Goblin movie. I don't think we'll get that. You know, that wouldn't fly. You'd have to have somebody to root for, so to speak.
Which is,
I don't think it'll be a greater of two evils.
Yeah, which is why I don't like the idea of them teasing spin-offs to begin with, because that's what it'll lead to when you scrape the bottom of the
but
barrel.
But it depends on what they have planned. Now, I'll grant you, if it becomes something like, you know, Sandman versus Hydro Man, you know, battle for New York City, okay. You know, all right, I'll give you that one. But I don't think they'll do that. They'll pretty much have to have somebody put in the hero position.
Who will it be besides Spider-Man? Who else do they have? They got nothing. They got nothing. Unless they do the stupid shit.
They could use Venom. Oh. They could use Venom.
Fuck Venom, sir.
Venom had to.
No, I understand. I understand. I can't ignore it. I can ignore it, but outside of that, what do you have? Nothing.
Ben Reilly.
Brown?
Oh, God.
The Prowler? The
Rocket Racer.
I don't know, but they don't. Let's just say they don't have.
What about Stalin was a superhero for 5 minutes? They got that property, don't they?
They don't have the amount of tools in the toy box to play with.
What about Aranya? Huh? Is Aranya covered under Spider-Man property?
It's Spider-Girl. Madam Web? Silver Sable.
Would you really watch a Silver Sable movie? I wouldn't.
I wouldn't mind that.
I would.
Silver Sable? That wouldn't be.
No, because I wouldn't even read a comic series dedicated to her. So I sure as hell not going to watch a 2-hour movie dedicated to her. She's fine as she comes in every.
You know, I don't read Spider-Man currently, but I'm going to go see the movie. You know, however the character works or doesn't work for you, more power to you. I'm just saying, you know, they could do something. It's not, oh, my God, this can't work because. No, it can work. It just depends on how you approach the subject. Bri brought up before with, having Spider-Man teaming up with somebody. Can you imagine, think about it, can you imagine if we actually got to see a movie version of Marvel team up? Can you imagine that?
It'd be great.
Exactly. So while I'll grant you, I probably wouldn't do that first and then introduce the hero in that movie. I might do another movie and have that other potential hero show up there. And then next thing you know, boom, it may be a little bit there. And then do Marvel team up the movie and boom, that's what we got. And they maybe introduce you'd have to have a big villain for that. You know, if you're going to do a Marvel team up and then introduce another hero flashback kind of sort of in that. But, you know, that's how you would expand it. You know, you'd have to introduce the characters. Correct. You'd have to introduce the characters. But simply expanding to a spinoff with a villain like Venom, that doesn't mean auto fail. You know,
to me, it does. That With what we know of who they have, it's not enough. They don't have the guns. They don't have the guns to compete with the other boys, and they're trying to.
There's nothing wrong with trying. I'll give anybody a chance to try. If you fail, if you succeed, we won't know unless you attempt it. If they actually say they tried to do Man-Wolf, you know, because hey, we actually had J. Jonah Jameson's son, you know. Say they actually pulled the character from Spider-Man 3, and even though nothing else happened to him beyond him coming back safely with the symbiote attached to the ship or whatever it was.
He never came. It never happened. The symbiote just showed up in 3.
All right, well, let's say they just kind of dropped it in there as having happened. We just didn't see it for British kids, you know, a version of Peter Parker. And let's say he actually gets the, what was it, that gemstone that turned him into Man-Wolf, you know? I mean, it's not.
You're really reaching when you go to Man-Wolf.
I'm just saying they mix him with Bloodstones.
Yeah, but you're real like for a general movie audience, you're really reaching with Man-Wolf.
Yeah, but you could do that because the general audience wouldn't know the fucking difference. It wouldn't know. I mean, yeah, you'd have a bunch of fans going, "Hey, that's not right."
No, it's just like who? No, people will go, "Who the fuck is Man-Wolf? And why the fuck is he here?"
Yeah, what they're gonna do? They did the same thing with freaking Electro. Like the general audience knew Electro.
More people know Electro than fucking Man-Wolf.
Well, Ding, ding, round's over, back to your corner, zip it up, let's go. John's been sitting here waiting for his crack in it.
Okay, well, like I said, I'm just saying a Venom movie could work. Most likely he'll be the anti-hero, and that basically puts him in, like, Wolverine's role. It could work. It just depends on how they pull it off. That's all I'll say.
Okay, John, I think you were waiting patiently.
Yeah, there was really no... I really had no opinion on it other than it'd be interesting to see how they pull it off. But otherwise, I'm like, unless you pull the Ben Reilly card, you know, or clones or that type of thing, it's going to be kind of hard to do.
Yeah. Although,
I would love to see a Marvel team up one, you know, and you know it would be cool. But I'm like, you know, it's just time, sign the check, give it back to Disney so they can do it right, you know, something like that. Otherwise, I'm just like meh, and I'm so trying really hard not to make a really tasteless joke involving Manwich and Brian Singer. So let's go on.
Okay, keeping on the theme of Spider-Man for the moment. As most movies are wont to do, Spider-Man has a forthcoming video game adaptation.
Movie tie-in games!
However, there's been some presumed trouble on the front, that is The Amazing Spider-Man 2 coming to the platform of Xbox One.
No, call it by its proper name, X-Bone.
X-Bone.
There you go. Good boy.
The glitch in the Matrix was first spotted, however, when they realized that Australia was canceling all of its Xbox One pre-orders. And I believe, Ben, you mentioned how the UK pre-orders were announced to be delayed indefinitely, I believe.
From what I understand, yes.
Yeah. So there's been some question as to whether or not Activision will still get to see... will still carry Xbox One's deal with Spider-Man 2.
Which,
however,
go ahead. No, you go ahead. Continue.
I was just gonna say that. Interestingly enough, it's coming out on the Xbox 360. Doesn't seem to have been hindered in any way, which gives one pause. But that could just be me.
Which it doesn't matter. What I mean, I hate to disrail, like to sort of tear down the segment. Well, it's still available for you Wii U owners, your 3DS owners, PS3, PS4. And Xbox 360 owners, as Brian pointed out. You know, let's face it. It's available on all platforms for the most part, even PC. So I'm just finding curious, like, I just really want to know why. Was there a problem with the version? You know?
Probably getting the three rings of death.
I mean, you know, I mean, like to just cancel a game, you know, especially to people who only... I mean... Who have Xbox Ones. And from what I understand, the first Amazing Spider-Man movie game was actually pretty good. You know, it brought shades of Spider-Man 2. Apparently, that's how good it was. I haven't played it. I want to play it, but I don't know. And this one seemed to... I don't know how... I haven't seen anything on this one, but it's odd. As covering video games as I am, it's always eyebrow-raising when a game gets canceled. Or you don't hear about its release for a while. But regardless, you can still buy it on the superior PS4 or even the superior PS3. You know, or if you own a Wii U like I do, you can play that version and play with a tablet. You know, or play it in 3D and 3DS version. So you have multiple versions to play for. I just hope they actually come out with an answer for people who own X-Bones, and they'll say, well, why? And people who wanted to buy the game, well, why was it canceled? You know, why, especially when you have Australia basically canceling all pre-orders, you know. I'm curious. I want an answer. Damn it, Activision, you have to fucking answer for this shit.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they want to, you know, make it extra specially good.
Was that an X pun?
Yeah.
God.
Yeah. X bony specially good.
Maybe it's because they couldn't get the Kinect features to work. Because it never fucking works.
Maybe they just can't get it.
Maybe Sony's just swinging their big stick at Activision. I don't know.
Then why is the Wii U and 3DS version coming out?
Because Wii U is simple. Like Nintendo. The 3DS is Everybody simple. Likes Nintendo.
One too bad they're not buying the Wii U.
Well, they're one of the more likable companies, what I meant. They have a very good public image, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, versus Xbox One. Microsoft is like,
That's true.
Whereas it's like, you know, their sales
plus
may tank.
PlayStation is owned
you know,
by
we're
Sony
not going to buy your products, but we like you.
We want your money. Give it to us anyway. And here, put this camera in your living room.
I suppose just my quick piece on the matter, I really don't care one way or the other. To me, the epitome of movie tie-in video games came with X-Men Origins Wolverine Uncaged Edition, which was a damn good one. If
that's
I
better than that's the rare example of the game being better than the movie.
Granted, it wasn't a very high bar they had to hurdle, but still, it came out like roses. I enjoyed what they did with John Wraith and Mystique, but that's neither here nor there because this is about Spider-Man game, and I don't care about Spider-Man video games. For me, the last one I think I ever played was the tie-in for Spider-Man 2. That was Sam Raimi's. And that one, was pretty good. But yeah, I don't care. So I'm out with this one for right now. I'm done.
Well, before I pass on the taser, I know if I buy it, I'll probably buy the Wii U version just because I like see what they do interesting with the game tablet. Plus, since it's open world, it's probably be open world like the first game. So just looking instead of looking at the mini map on the screen, just looking down real quick on a bigger screen, looking at the map is a lot more fun, at least for me, and I've gotten used to it. So yeah, you guys take it, taser or John, you can either go first.
Haven't all the Spider-Man games been open world?
No.
Really?
No, they have
all the movie licensed ones have been, but not all the
that's what I mean.
Okay, well you said Spider-Man games in general, so.
Oh no! All right, my mistake. I don't have an X-Bone, and I'm not buying this game regardless. I just ha! You people on X-Bone ain't getting shit. Hey, you suck. Okay, I'm done.
John.
I'm really not sure what's going on there. It's kind of a shame that they're excluding X-Bone, but yet they're letting Xbox 360 people get it, which, hallelujah, I've got one. So I can go ahead and get that if I hear good buzz. The last Spider-Man game I actually played was on the PlayStation. That was the first one they did.
Oh, with Doc Ock as the villain?
Yep.
Oh, I love that game. Where he becomes Carnage Ock at the end of the game.
Uh-huh.
Oh God.
Yeah.
I love that game.
And my kids still play that when we visit my in-laws when we go over there. And I've heard the other games, you know, the movie licensed ones have been good. I just haven't gotten around to finding one and playing one. It's just I don't know. I just haven't. You know, I play too much Mortal Kombat, I guess, but. And wrestling, but I don't know, understand, but I guess we'll find out later. I hope it's just not some sort of, you know, Sony going, you know, Activision going, yeah, man, Microsoft, but, you know, if they were going to do that, then why did they make 360, you know? So maybe there's something good dealing with the hardware, you know, like you said, with the Kinect, you never know. So we'll just have to see how it goes. That's about all I could say on it. Yeah.
I do. Oh, God, I'm having nostalgia memories of playing that game. As dated as it is now, you know, that was that you could actually play a Scarlet Spider in that game, if you didn't know. Ooh. If you unlock the costume.
You can.
Scarlet Spider, Venom, lots of Spider-Man costumes. But yeah, Doc Ock becoming Carnage, getting the Carnage symbiote at the end was crazy. Kind of terrifying, too, because the final sequence is basically you. It's like a Metroid escape sequence where you have to escape while Doc Ock is chasing after you with the Carnage face coming after you. It's hilarious and awesome at the same time.
The last Spider-Man game I played was on the Sega Genesis.
Spider-Man Maximum Carnage?
Kingpin.
Oh,
no. No, we had to fight Kingpin, the very first Spider-Man game on the Genesis.
I never played
That last Spider-Man game I played.
Never played that one. Although,
I played unfortunately.
You had to kick freaking Kingpin above his nose, like basically on his forehead. That's the only place that he could be hurt. You couldn't web him. You couldn't do anything. And you had to do that 3 to 5 times in order to save Mary Jane. And you had to do it within like 2 minutes. If you didn't, she fell in the vat. He got away. Game over. Then you had to play the whole game to get back to that point just to beat him. I stop right there.
Brian, before we move on, you want anything on your last Spider-Man game you played?
The last one I played was the Spider-Man 3 tie-in. Less said about that, the better.
Yeah, that one wasn't so good.
That actually had one?
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a whole thing with crates.
Honestly, I did not know that there was a Spider-Man 3. Okay, mm-hmm. My bad.
Oh, but dude, let me tell you, there was this sexy gang of gothic chicks who robbed banks and stuff, and it was...
Awesome. I don't remember that.
Chicks in leather and spikes. All
the
right.
Arsenic Candy Gang. They were dope. I love them. And the way they handled Kraven wasn't too bad either. Granted, it was still bad, but it wasn't too bad.
All right, well, there you go. Let us know what your favorite Spider-Man game is. Or what was the last one you played? That'd be fun. All right, so let's go on to comics, the comics to parts you all care about. Because I only had two Marvel books and they're both X-Men related, I chose to go with the one that I was more entertained by, which was Uncanny X-Men number 20, The Return of Chris the continuing hunt for Cyclops and whoever is sending the Sentinels. It's another great issue of Uncanny X-Men. I am kicking myself that I wasn't reading the series when it initially came out. I feel so bad for Mr. Bond, who's the main character. I can't remember his name. What is this guy's name, Brian? The guy they're interrogating at the beginning?
Guy they're interrogating. Wait, what?
Bond, the one Maria Hill's interrogating. David. It's right.
Oh, Hijack.
Is that his name?
It's his X-Men name, Hijack.
Okay.
Yeah.
I love the sort of interrogation scene. And the sort of, like, what is it, one, two, three-page sequence of the psychic freeze of Maria Hill and Cyclops going at each other, trying to get see if information out of each other. And the cuckoos basically revealing that Maria Hill has the hots for Cyclops, and how could she have the hots for somebody that she detests.
That I got a kick out of. That was brilliant.
And then the sort of my favorite panel was when she... I guess it's one of the cuckoos knocked out all the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents, and it's just Cyclops behind her, your move, Miss Hill. I just love that sort of ballsy approach. This is the Cyclops that I want, not the...
Oh, he gets more ballsier at the end of the issue, too.
Yeah.
Don't forget about that.
We also learn that apparently Blob is an addict to MGH, because if you don't remember, Blob lost his powers through to House of M, and now, I believe with the recent Phoenix event, he got his powers back, and I guess, or MGH, I don't really know. He has his powers back, and he's addicted to MGH, and basically the whole little scene was, you know, you can't be stealing from her, and all this stuff, and it was a nice little exposition scene between, to see what Blob was doing, and Mystique trying to keep her in check. And sort of Maria Hill just jumping on Dazzler. You know, it's like, why weren't you doing this? Because I was over here on your orders. And sort of that, how you have to shut the fuck up because you told somebody to do something when they should have been doing something else.
They actually revealed where Dazzler was?
Yeah, she's held up in Madripoor. They revealed that in the last issue.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, they got her,
Mystique is using her blood to synthesize the MGH that's flooding the streets.
Yeah, they have her comb it up. So we get a little hint. We get a secret look into who's hiding the Sentinels, but we still don't know who it is. And they even as the X-Men begin to make their move. And so after much deliberation, they finally figured out it has to tie into using Cerebro somehow. Like how else could they be tracking him? These people, whoever, because they think it's S.H.I.E.L.D., but S.H.I.E.L.D. denies it, or at least somebody within S.H.I.E.L.D. So basically, it's somebody within S.H.I.E.L.D. that Maria Hill doesn't have access to. Once again, playing at that espionage aspect again, and they believe that has something to do with using Cerebro. And of course, only a certain amount of people know how to use Cerebro. Most of them are dead. One of them is still alive. Is Hank McCoy, the Beast? So, what does Mr. Cyclops, Mr. Scott Summers, do? He basically has Ileana teleport them. Under regulations again, against what Emma Frost has, basically saying that what Cyclops is doing is basically starting war between the two schools. And so they show up. Of course, everybody shows up. And I even like Bobby Drake's like, hey, it's reunion. Okay, it's nice seeing you. Bye-bye, get out of here. Wolverine quickly wants to gut him. But basically, Cyclops calls out Beast, saying he accused him of sending Sentinels. Basically mutant on mutant crime, which is sort of like that sort of, it's that moment of, Oh, hell no, you did not just call Beast the mutant killer. You know?
I think his exact words were, how dare you?
Yeah. Like, literally, how, you know. He even asked him to see his lab. You know, like, I just couldn't believe he went there. Like, really? Like, I know you don't like each other. But then, for some reason, Cyclops' powers go AWOL. And, you know, they found Scott Summers, and so now S.H.I.E.L.D. is heading right towards the Jean Grey School for Higher Learning to arrest Cyclops. So, yeah, that was interesting. So now we know it's not S.H.I.E.L.D. We know that somebody within S.H.I.E.L.D., but we don't exactly know who or why they're doing this, so it has me more curious about. But it feels like things are starting to ramp up again for this title, and we're building. It's heading towards a conclusion of finding out who and exactly why they're targeting Scott Summers specifically.
Probably Blurry. Blurry's behind it. That damn Blurry.
No, he's under Dr. Mind Bubble's psychedelic bubble, so he couldn't do it. That's a real thing. That's a real thing, by the way. Go read Captain America.
So who it is? It kind of looks like Mysterio almost, which has me laughing.
Well, I mean, it'd be nice to see a non-mutant villain get involved in mutant affairs. Maybe Mysterio is a mutant, hates mutants.
Maybe it's Arcade.
No, he's an Avengers ring. He's an Avengers undercover. He's doing that shit.
That doesn't mean he can't be in this too.
Yes, it does.
Why?
Because I said so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Also, because if they were going to do that, they'd do it in all new X-Men where Laura Kinney is, and she was the one who had to beef with Arcade. So.
Yeah.
Not necessarily.
Yeah, necessarily.
No, not necessarily. There's nothing that says he would have to be.
Fair enough, but still, he doesn't have a beef with them personally. He's a psycho. It's he's X-Men. Beef with everybody.
No, he screws with X-Men. So where else would you find the greatest amount of X-Men? Hmm?
But he also, how would he be able to track him that fast?
You'd find it in Cyclops' little closeted group? No, you wouldn't. You'd find it at the Jean Grey school.
Ah, but maybe not if he wanted to take and go after Cyclops. Therefore, he starts over with the Jean Grey school, knowing that it would lead him over there.
Aha. Uh-huh. It's on Arcade.
Maybe. I'm pretty sure it's on Arcade. Tinkerer screwing with the mutants. Just
You know what? Maybe it's that singer guy.
Oh, God, yeah, fucking, really? Really? God, fucking, okay, I give it a 4 out of 5. If it's the issue's ramping up, still treading water a little bit, but otherwise a solid, very solid issue. Chris Bocciolo, as usual, was great, great art. The man does not get enough praise. Take it fucking away, Brian. God fucking damn it.
Okay, keeping on the theme of X-Men, I had Adjectiveless X-Men, number 13. By Mr. Brian Wood and illustrated by Mr. Clay Mann. Now, this issue actually reminded me why I enjoy Brian Wood's writing so much and why he's good at it. This issue is sort of the interlude between the wrapping up of the Archaea storyline. I believe it's Archaea. Archaea storyline and building up to a new storyline that drops in this issue. And the way he does it is he fuses what feels like a holding pattern issue with the start of the brand new storyline. He takes those two things and he blends it together flawlessly. So, diving right in, we open to an undisclosed location where a dangerous prisoner is being transported by a group of military men. They drug him to take him out and move him safely. However, it turns out he's adept to the drugs, and it turns out they have no more effect on him. So he wakes up and owns them. Like, just straight up takes out, I believe it's 7 or 8 men, all by himself, jacks their copter, and drives off into the sunset, so to speak. And the entire time he's speaking about how he's committed crimes, abuses, atrocities, and more than one act of genocide. And he keeps saying things like, quote, the future is running out, end quote. So he refers to this thing, the future, and he talks about how there's another, someone else, who supposedly has control or can wield this, the future, or whatever the hell it is. And he knows exactly where to find this person. Now, we cut back to the Jean Grey School, wherein the team of all female X-Men are just coming off of the whole thing with Archaea and the Sisterhood and such. And we get little vignettes of what they're doing. Rachel Grey is obsessing over where to find Sublime after he ducked out following the end of Archaea. We get scenes of Monet St. Croix duking it out with Rock Slide to great effect. The whole place shakes and the lights flicker and stuff. And then we get another scene that's really, really interesting. It's something I think Taser would get kicked out of. I don't know, Taser, do you read this book?
Which book?
X-Men by Brian Wood, just adjective as X-Men.
I've been holding on to it, but I haven't touched it in a while.
This might get you to start reading. Now, issue number 13 pretty much has Psylocke calling out Storm on her bullshit and saying this Storm, who she is right now, is a terrible leader. She's not someone who commands respect or authority. And in fact, Psylocke goes on to say that the Aurora Monroe that she was proud to follow was the one who gave Scott Summers the proverbial finger during the proto-mutant crisis. And that Headmaster Aurora is, quote, my least favorite Aurora, end quote. And so what we get is really a calling out of Storm's character and how she's sort of not really who she used to be, but she's not someone. She's really in kind of an off state right now. She's not really herself, which I found interesting because this is coming from Psylocke, of all people. And Psylocke has been through some shit, so I would take her word at face value. And her advice is priceless. Your Storm, declare the mandate, own the mandate, give them all the finger, end quote. And that's probably the best advice I think Storm's gotten as of late. Although I think someone
that's
did poke.
Not bad.
I think someone poked fun at her marriage last issue. Or was that different?
God.
Someone asked her, like, how's the marriage?
She's fucking Wolverine now. It's fine.
I forget what book that was. But
she traded down.
We also see a little side story of Hank giving Jubilee's surrogate son Shogo a checkup. Shogo was a boy who was abandoned during the start of this whole series, and then he was adopted sort of by Jubilee, and now she's sort of taking care of him to that effect. And we see her sort of enjoying the role of playing mother coming into her own, especially coming off of Battle of the Atom. Now, I don't want to spoil it, but I think we've all read it, and really, I don't give a shit. So, in the future, the guy flying around in the silver and purple Sentinel X armor suit, sort of like an Iron Man type thing, was Shogo, Jubilee's adopted son. And so that sort of gives her the courage to move forward and sort of take up more of an active role in her parenting him. But then things start to get weird. The X-Kiddies are playing a game of baseball on the front lawn, and during the game, Teon, a.k.a. Primal, one of Hope's five lights, you know, 5 points of light, he's the one with hyper instinct. That is, he adapts perfectly to survive. Sort of like Darwin, but not, like, as powerful. He has a increased fight-or-flight instinct. He is hyper instinct. He can, you know... He gets shot, and he doesn't see it coming, doesn't hear it coming, doesn't even notice he's been shot until he's on the ground bleeding out. And as they're rushing him in to get medical attention, Quentin Quiry, Kid Omega, is trying to scan to find out who fired the shot, and he can't. He senses things out there, low-level animals and organisms and like that, but as far as who shot this kid, there's just no one there. He cannot find them with his psychic ability. And for an Omega-level mutant with a future of him being the Phoenix, that's actually saying something. This kid is powerless to detect this guy. So Primal's in surgery, and Hank McCoy is operating on him. And he can't prove it, but he deduces that the shot that took Teon down was not, in fact, not meant to kill him. It was a surgical shot meant to wound and do grievous damage, but not to kill him. And if you saw the shot, you'd think that was bullshit because that kid was dead on his feet. But no. Turns out that was just sort of like a warning shot. So Hank's going to run ballistics on the bullet. And during lockdown at the Jean Grey school, another new mutant, Sprite, she's a Chinese girl with fairy wings and such.
Oh, yeah, she was the one that showed up in AVX.
Yeah, that was her. Stops for a drink of water at a water fountain, gets a few feet away, then drops, having coughed up a lung, so to speak. It seems that for all intents and purposes, she was poisoned. And then we cut to Jubilee, who is parading around her room, cleaning it up, taking care of Shogo at the same time, when a new message appears on her phone. And I quote, "You have my son. I'm coming to reclaim him. You and everyone else in that school will die. This is the future. End quote. And so we learned the man from the beginning of the story, the one who owned about 8 soldiers and hijacked a copter, is Shogo's father. And that he is coming to reclaim his child. But the story doesn't end there. Turns out there's a little bit of a backstory. Not a backstory. What do you call it? A backup feature, I suppose. After Tion gets shot, but before Sprite gets poisoned, the team of Hellion, Rockslide, Anol, something like that, I believe his name was. Whatever. The openly gay reptilian kid and Brew. They decide that they want to form their own team of X-Men to protect themselves because they got hit with Primal getting shot, and now they got a hit back. So they decide to crash a Danger Room session that looks a lot like Dragon Age, or so to speak. It's a medieval fantasy type thing that Santos is able to call out. Santos is a Rockslide in this effect. He's able to call him out immediately. Medieval army on the horizon. Hellion, I'd estimate about 10,000 men on foot. Cavalry, some heavy siege. Archers are falling back. And he looks at them and goes, "So I play RPGs. You got a problem with that?" And so they send Santos Baron in to try and dismantle the army, and they find they can't get out of the Danger Room stint. And they get surprised by Psylocke, because it turns out that it's her sim in particular. She created it, and so it's a neat little backup feature, and it doesn't distract really from the Bloodline story going on right now. And I gotta say, it's got me really excited. I want to know who the hell this guy is, why he's so shady and important, why they had to keep him on lockdown, and you know, what Shogo's connection is to him, you know, what he expects of Shogo. Because throughout the book, he references the future. It's the future. He's the future. I'm the future. And that'll be touched upon, more than likely. So we'll see where that leads. But it really has me interested into who this guy is and what his purpose is. And moreover, what his part is in the X-Kids being taken down. Because you just know he has something to do with it. I mean, a sniper shot that wounds, but by all intents and purposes, looks like it could kill, and Sprite being poisoned by water from inside the school, and now Jubilee's getting called out like, "You have my son, I'm going to come take him back." So this guy has me really curious as to who the hell he is and what he can do, because to do this kind of stuff in one issue and to have this great effect on the school is astounding. I quite enjoyed it. And like I said, the balancing between the lull from one story arc to the other and the introduction of the new storyline was handled flawlessly by Brian Wood. Clay Mann's pencils I'm growing to quite enjoy. I want to see him on some more stuff. But overall, it was a really, really enjoyable read. I really thought it was a good issue. I give it 4.5 out of 5. Real easy. Even the backup feature really just kind of excited me. So this book has just jumped up a notch from where it was. Because, no, Ben, we were talking before how you had, I think, dropped the book.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't terrible, but like, look, this is the problem the comics have right now. There's too many good books, in my opinion. Right. So when I compare it to, say, some of the, I'll be honest, I'd rather much read an Image book, a new Image book, than continue reading an X-Men book that can get in trades for $10. You know.
Fair enough, I suppose. But I think I will say this. I do agree with you that by the time the end of the Archaea storyline ended up, the story had sort of petered out. You know, it lost steam, didn't really excite me. This issue has just excited me again. It's only 6 parts according to the introduction, so I am actually quite excited for this. I gave it a 4.5 out of 5. Real, real good stuff. I recommend it to anyone who's a fan of all-female X-Men or who just likes dissing Storm, because who doesn't like dissing Storm, you know? And also seeing Jubilee stress out, because this guy's going to probably fuck her up. But that's just my opinion.
Taser, take it away, buddy.
I decided that I'm going to, you know, fulfill the... Actually, I'm going to continue the mutant tradition we've been running so far and do Nightcrawler #1. So I'm guessing this will probably be, you know, Wes' favorite episode, because it's mutant heavy. Either way.
That son of a bitch. You review a book for him and he's not even appreciative.
To be fair, he was mostly talking about my rants. But anyway, Nightcrawler number one, written by Chris Claremont, and art by, what's his name? Knock? Is that how you pronounce it?
Todd Knock.
Yeah, okay, cool. You know,
Todd Knock.
You just beat me to it. Yeah. You know, I missed this guy on art because he did Young Justice, I think, for like the entire run. And I had so much fun with him on, you know, with his art on that book. It just, it sold it as far as I was concerned. And I don't know what he moved on to after that. Whatever it was, I didn't pick up. But he's doing the art for this. And it's solid, you know. It works for me. Anyway, on to the story. The book starts off with Nightcrawler in a, you know, fight session with Wolverine. You know, they're fighting with sticks, and, you know, Nightcrawler's doing his thing where he's using his tail as an extra appendage, and he's trying to get past Wolverine's defenses, and Wolverine's got the new armor, so it's new look, it's new armored Wolverine. I'm kind of looking at this, and I'm going, okay, so I see the stuff on the forearms and the, you know, the upper arms, but where's the rest of the armor, so to speak? I don't know. I don't get it. It just looks like a different kind. Oh, on the sides. Okay, there we go. I'm actually just saying that. I just never noticed it before. But, you know, Nightcrawler is, you know, bouncing around, and he's, you know, trying different angles of attacks, and, you know, Wolverine is blocking basically everything, but apparently he's getting mad while doing so, and, you know, Storm and Beast and this chick Cecilia, I don't know her, you know, so I guess she's probably in Wolverine and the X-Men or something. You know, they're monitoring, you know, what's going on down below, and they notice that, you know, Wolverine, he's actually getting mad during a sparring practice. And it's not like, you know, Nightcrawler's making fun of him, but, you know, he just starts getting pissed. And then Wolverine pops his claws and starts to stretch the batons. And, you know, Nightcrawler's like, oh Lord, stop this. And before things could get any worse, Storm comes in, drops a lightning bolt, and, you know, Logan's all, I'm okay. I just got upset a little. That's all. Nothing serious. So, you know, Storm, you know, checks on Kurt, and he's all, hey, I'm fine. And true enough, Nightcrawler is still smiling, you know. So I got to admit, I'm enjoying this book so far. And, you know, moves on with him, you know, moving around the school and seeing all the new students, and, you know, he's doing it from his own unique perspective, which is, you know, on the ceiling. And then he finds out that the ceiling isn't his anymore because you've got, I don't know, what's this? You've got somebody who's like a scorpion or whatever passing through, and he's moving along the ceiling. So, you know, he kind of looks a little bit put upon, but then he gets a mental communique from Rachel. They go and they have a, you know, a cup of tea. And this sequence, their conversation is like, you know, couple of old friends, you know, trying to recap, get together, you know, reconnect. But something tells me they're going to take and have Rachel, you know, smooge up to him. I don't know. It's weird how the conversation plays out. I mean, you know, she doesn't say anything over it, but that's just how I'm seeing it, you know? But either way, Kurt's not thinking about her. He's thinking about his old flame, good old Amanda. And, you know, he decides to look her up. She's on her way back home. She gets a sense that somebody's looking at her, and we don't really see. We see something, but we're not sure what. Either way, she gets into the apartment, and, you know, Kurt's there and a couple of the Bamfs, and, you know, they're getting all happy and whatever. And I'm kind of, didn't they break up, like, way back when? But, you know, apparently that didn't happen, or it got retconned or something, because, you know, they're lip-locking, you know. Granted, they have a long history, so maybe there was something there, you know, maybe something related to that. But either which way, the lip-locking doesn't last too long, because in comes in big armored guy. who never really, you know, gives his name, but he just starts, you know, blasting things around. He's trying to capture her. And, you know, Nightcrawler's not having any of that. So he gets her out of danger. And then it's the Bamf's jumping on the guy. And then Nightcrawler's trying to hit him all over the place. And it's not really doing a whole lot because he's big and armored. And Nightcrawler manages to, you know, toss the guy into a weakened section of the wall of her apartment that has been completely, you know, was wrecked by him with an earlier shot. And Judo throwing him into it drops the whole thing on top of him. So, you know. Oh, look, he's out of the fight, but we get the idea that, you know, he'll be back. You know, I hear him moving around or, you know, given his size, they figure it probably won't take him long to extricate himself. So Amanda comes in, and now she's all decked out in her battle garb, so to speak, and they go looking to see what they can do about him, but he's gone. You know, dude apparently teleports or some mess like that. So Amanda has no idea what's going on. You know, Kurt's not going to leave her alone because, well, he just got back from the dead, and my pseudo-ex chick, you know, apparently needs some help. So, hey, it's time for a whirlwind adventure, and they decide that they're going to go see her mom, Margalie, and I'm kind of remembering her dying, too. You know, I granted, it's been a while since I've read anything related to Nightcrawler, but I'm remembering somebody. I think her mother was dead, but whatever. She, you know, calls upon the Mystic Forces, and, you know, it's away they go. And that's where, you know, the book ends. This looks like it's going to be a fun book, you know, not too drama heavy, not too maudlin, you know, not a whole lot of drama. But, you know, a good, solid, fun read. And this, I don't know, it felt a little brief, but it wasn't a bad thing, you know. This should be an easy book to pick up. Granted, it's a number one. But this looks like something that, you know, you could, you know, like all ages. I think anybody could pick up this book and have fun with it. I enjoyed it, you know. It was something you don't have a whole lot. You know, it was a book that just wasn't all heavy and downtrodden and depressing. I'm going to give this book a 4.2 Warriors out of 5.
Well, it's
pick this up.
It's a good thing it seems like Chris Claremont still has the magic.
Yeah. And I got to say, Nock's art complements the story. You know, he doesn't do things like, you know, you know, things are a bit, they're lighter, you know. I don't know, it's hard to describe, but his art works here. His art really works here. Well, and it's good to see him back.
Yep. Well, good. If you're reading Nightcrawler, I won't be reading it just because I have no interest in reading Nightcrawler by himself. But maybe I'll check out the trade now that of your glowing recommendation. Last but not least, to close out the show, Mr. Jonathan.
Yes.
Take it away, amigo.
Okay, I've got Fantastic Four 1. It is by James Robinson and as the writer, and Leonard Kirk as the artist, with Carl Kessel doing lettering, inks, and stuff like that. It is the new number one in, like, the last, like, what, fifth or sixth number one they've had in the last 5 years, it seems like. But it opens up with Sue Storm writing to her children in a book, and, you know, in a dark, she's sitting here under a dark lamp, you know, dark room under a lamp, writing about her and saying how things have just changed and stuff, how everything went from happy-go-lucky to just dark, why Reed is all of a sudden now is a broken man, a shell. Thing is, you know, Uncle Ben is in prison for murder. And the only reason why he's there is because Reed testified against him. And Human Torch is, like, gone going on to becoming a drunk and lout and all that, and, you know, womanizer, which is not much of a change anyway. And then she's all by herself and can't seem to think what's going on. And it flashes back to a few days, a few months earlier, where they're all fighting a familiar figure, a guy named Fin Fang Foom. And they're all, of course, in the typical Fantastic Four deal where they're all going, nah, this won't take long. And reading him, you know, scanning him and all that, can't figure out what's going on, you know, why he's there. And, of course, you got Sue doing her invisible shields and stuff to protect the populace, and thing and torture both, you know, taking on him by himself. And then at one point, you know, Johnny's like, okay, you got this. I've got this too, Reed. You want a distraction? I'm all about it. And of course, thing goes, yeah, it ain't gonna be hard for you, Johnny boy, because God knows you're always distracting me. Now let me get a close and a crack at him, because here I come, Scaly. It's Clob. And then he gets knocked out of the sky before he can finish his trademark. And he's like, nuts. And, you know, Johnny's like, Ben, are you all right there, buddy? And he's like, yeah, I'm fine, Johnny. Bruce Pride is all. And Johnny Storm's like, yeah, good. As long as you're all right, then har har. You know, the typical. And then they finally start figuring out what they need to do with the with Fin Fang Foom. And, you know, the thing does his good old, it's clobbering time, knocks him out with one punch. And they have S.H.I.E.L.D. come in and pick him up, and they're wondering why it seems like, you know, why he's acting weird. And they talk to Agent Fury, or Blurry, as we know. And okay, we flash back after the dealing with the bank boom. It's at the Baxter Building, and Reed's wondering why Sue's having problem, you know, is just being maudlin, and she's really saying, you know, she's missing Valeria, and for some reason they want to go to, she really wants to go to Laveria to fly her, but, you know, bring her back. And, you know, apparently she's mad at them keeping secrets from them and all that, and she's just, so they're trying to be, and he's telling her, just be patient, we'll, you know, get her back soon. And then all of a sudden we have the kids from the Freedom Force, you know, come in and kind of, you know, making things all kind of cute and all that. And you have Dragon Man come in and help, you know, saying, hey, okay, everybody needs to calm down. They get them all back, and they, you know, back to where they need to be to go into bed. And then Reed and Sue do their normal kissing, you know, kissing each other and saying everything will be fine. And then you have the thing checking in on an old friend, and it turns out to be Alicia Masters. And she's in the place with the skull ring, and she's finally said, come here, and it's been a while since I've done a face study of you, and I miss it. And they just kind of have a nice, quiet moment being, yeah. And then Johnny's off seeing his agent and trying to find out what's going on, and I guess he's going to have a reality show or some sort of tour that he's going to be doing. And it all ends with where it says, and so the day ended, a good one, all in all. And yes, I may have been brokenhearted about you, Val, but your choice to be apart from us. But even I had to admit that in so many other ways, the future seemed so positive and so bright and blue, or bright and alive. And then while she's saying this, it shows into one of Reed's labs, and she's like, after so many travels so long away, just the fact that the Fantastic Four were home again seemed like such a wonderful thing. And you see Gateway saying sealed, sealed, unsealed. This door opens up, these things start coming out, and it says, how were we to know that when hindsight would be so obvious? This day marked the end of happiness, the end of hope, the end of family. And it looks like a whole bunch of creatures from the negative zone start invading Manhattan.
Swarm.
Yeah. Kind of, sort of. They look like, sort of like a Nihilist type stuff, but almost look like a bad hybrid between the Brood and Annihilus' creatures. Yeah. And it says next, and it says next, Assault on Manhattan. And I have to give James Robertson a thumbs up. He did a really good, quick encapsulation of what makes the Fantastic Four, you know, work. You got, you know, Johnny and Ben doing their thing with each other, Sue and Reed, and also setting up things for the, you know, near future where we go, why the hell is Ben in prison and all this other stuff. And, you know, it's going to be a slow burn getting to it. And the artwork is pretty good. It's pretty, you know, I think it's Fantastic Four worthy. It's, you know, Ben looks like how you would think he would look, and Storm just, I think the only complaint I have about this issue is that it's, again, another damn number one, but also I don't understand why the Fantastic Four are wearing red and black costumes and instead of their traditional, you know, blue and black.
I think it's just a design shake-up, you know?
Yeah, but otherwise... I mean,
mostly everything been, like, blue, so, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really a complaint. I just was like, really? Okay, you know. And it looks cool, and I think I'm going to give issue two a try and see how it goes, because I'm a Robinson fan from way back, you know, from back when he did Starman, and I have to get back over to Invaders and see how that one's doing. I just haven't been able to catch up on those issues yet, because, again, they keep pumping out so much damn stuff, it's kind of hard to keep up with everything. But I think I have high hopes for this, although it's probably going to be ending, it'll probably end at issue 12 like every other thing, everything else, and get rebooted again within another year and a half. But I think it's going to be a fun ride, so I'm going to have to see how it goes. Because Fantastic Four, I went for a long time there. That was one of the few titles I was reading outside, out of Marvel when I had X-Men Burnout. So, and I've always grown up with them. So, got to see how it goes.
Thank you, John. And that'll, ladies and gentlemen, that'll conclude this week's episode of the Mighty...
What about our topic of conversation?
Yeah.
As we all know, yesterday was, at the time of recording, was the day, if you believe, was the day our Lord risen after having the shit beat out of him and nailed to two pieces of wood. So, we decided, that, you know what, since it's about the day, yesterday was the day of resurrection... What is one Marvel character, doesn't have to be a cape, that you would like to see resurrected? For me, it's easy. James Proudstar I, the original Thunderbird. Fuck his brother. I like the original. Just give me the original.
How could you say you liked the original when he had all of three issues?
I liked him in Giant Size X-Men. It informed my childhood, damn it. It's all I needed.
You weren't around when that book came out.
I read the comic later on, Dip.
Yeah, exactly. So and how much X-Men had you read before you read Giant Size X-Men 1?
200 issues? I had the essentials, damn it. I had those giant essentials. I like James Proudstar. I liked what he was.
But you can't say that he formed your childhood.
Yes, he did. Because I read about him when I was a kid.
All of two issues.
Yes.
The guy was in. That was the...
Yes, that was it. Hey, you don't need to be there for a long time to make a lasting impression, damn it.
All right, you're right. You're right, but I don't...
Back off.
It's hard to believe that. Two issues.
I fucking dressed like him for Halloween that year. Back the fuck up. I dressed like James Proudstar for Halloween. Bring back... James Proudstar, damn it. Alright, there you go. I'm done. Fucking taser ruining shit. Take it away, buddy.
Okay, my name's Ryan Singer. Anyway. Right, you next.
Oh, gosh, golly gee. Well... Being from Boston, I suppose it'd be remiss if I didn't say Banshee. I do miss Banshee.
Wait. Why would... He's Irish. No, he's Scottish.
What?
He's Scottish. He's not Irish. No, he's Scottish.
No, he's Irish.
No, he's Scottish.
Actually, he's Irish.
He's Scottish.
Ooh, we're split on this one.
We have the interwebs.
I'm pretty sure he's Scottish.
To Wikipedia! Yeah, he's Irish, I'm pretty sure. Because then Black Tom Cassidy, his brother is Irish. I know that for a fact.
And his daughter is Irish.
Yes, she is.
Laura, who's Scottish.
There you go. Fuck it. Whatever. Fine. You're not even real Irish, asshole.
I'm Irish-American, asshole.
You're not. Like, no. As one comedian said to one person, "Oh, you're not Irish. You're a fucking cunt." Take it away.
Oh my god. You know what? I hope Brian Singer comes visit you in your bed tonight. You fucking
prick. Really? With the Brian Singer jokes? God fucking damn it!
You hey, you provoked me. So I'd say Banshee first. Just you know. I don't really have strong feelings for the other character, although I feel like he would be a welcome new voice in the X-Men books, particularly over in the matter of Cyclops' douchebaggery. I'm trying to think of who's dead at the moment. It's hard to keep track of who's dead in the comics at the present day.
Uncle Ben is still dead.
Well, yeah, but to bring him back would just be a dick move. I mean, who wants to bring him
exactly.
back?
Exactly. Look, if Barry Allen can run out of death, and if,
Uncle Ben can cook his rice away from death.
and if Whatsnake can bring back Bucky, who we've actually seen his spirit numerous times, but then we find out, oh no, that couldn't have happened because Bucky is back here, and he's a Winter Soldier, why not bring back Uncle Ben?
Fair enough. Oh, you know who I'd bring back? Just at the moment... And, Ben, correct me if I'm wrong. I was having a conversation with someone at my comic book store the other day.
Mm-hmm.
Sharon Carter is dead?
She is we haven't seen a body. She was still...
No body. Okay.
Well, yeah, she fell off... I can't remember the exact... She fell off... It was in Dimension Z. The dimension itself was collapsing on itself. So... But she fell off
that
a very...
She's trapped somewhere.
Yeah, we never saw a body. So she's... Steve thinks she's dead. But we don't know. She's MIA, basically. She's MIA.
Okay.
But Steve has classified her as KIA.
You know who I'd bring back? And please don't misunderstand. I actually don't know this character. But you know what I would do just for shits and giggles? Because I would love to see him on an Avengers team. The original Swordsman. I would want to see him brought back and put on an Avengers team just for fucking kicks, because that sounds awesome.
You didn't read that whole mess with the that guy who was going around killing the gods, the God War?
Oh, the what's it, Chaos War?
Chaos War, God War, whichever one it was, because he actually brought Swordsman back in that.
He's alive?
No, he brought him back because he brought back a whole bunch of dead heroes. Swordsman ended up, you know, kind of getting up to his old tricks, but then going, no, I can't do that because I did die a hero. I'll die a hero again. Whatever, bullshit.
Sure,
but he brought back Swordsman again in that, you know? So, but, you know, it was awful, so I'm not surprised you don't know because it was awful, awful, awful.
Okay, so, yeah, give him a more respectable return to the stage then, shall we say. Yeah, but, you know, outside of that, there's really not a whole lot. I mean, it's hard to think because I don't think there's anyone really Well, I mean, Charles Xavier's dead, but, you know, his whole death is driving forward the events of the X-Men comics, so let's not bring
the
him
Wizard.
Back. Yes. The what?
The Wizard.
Really?
Sure, the Wizard.
Dude.
Wow,
bring back
No.
Stilt Man.
No. No.
Yeah, Stilt Man. Bring back Stilt Man.
No. You know who you should bring back? Gilgamesh.
What?
Yeah.
He's dead?
Yeah.
Yeah, he died years ago. Dude.
Yeah, Gilgamesh.
Really?
Yep.
I did not know that.
He died during that whole shit crossover story of the crossing.
You know, I did not know. Seriously.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, well,
wow.
It was a shitty storyline. What do you expect? I mean.
Yeah, bring back Gilgamesh.
It gave his team Tony. The news light.
Ew.
It's Gilgamesh.
He's an Eternal. He's an eternal.
Okay, here we go.
Yeah, he's on power. He's on power level of Thor and Iron and Hercules in terms of strength.
Oh wait. It is later shown that Gilgamesh is alive and once again associated with his fellow Eternals. He's alive.
Oh,
okay. Well, I thought he was dead.
Well, hey, he's an Eternal.
Taser, who would you see brought back?
Because I thoroughly detest Peter Parker, I would bring back Uncle Ben.
thought you were going to say Doc Ock.
Nah.
He'll be back. His body was...
Yeah, because they'll come up with some other bullshit for that. And, you know, it's a good thing we didn't review issue 31 because I was going to rip that to shreds. I'd bring back Uncle Ben, and I would bring back his parents for real this time, and then have them get a divorce because I'm evil. For a cape, I would bring back Nova. Now, and I don't mean Richard Rider, I mean Frankie Ray. Because I actually liked her. You know, she died? Yeah, she died back when I was reading Silver Surfer, if I remember correctly. And I haven't seen her in anything.
Bring her back, yeah.
I liked her. She was a fun character. And you know, I think, well, you know, if I'm going to go that far, bring back Richard Rider. Because, damn it, I miss Nova. You know, Nova was a kick-ass solid book. And Richard Rider was actually, at that point, Richard Rider was a good, you know, that's the guy I would, you know, after Cap, I would follow Richard Rider. Because Richard Rider was somebody that went to the dirt for you, you know. Yeah, bring him back. And last but not least, bring back Charles Xavier's reputation, because they slaughtered that a long time ago, and then they've just been dragging it through the mud to keep coming up with all these things that Xavier never talked about and you know, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, let's rewind the last 10 years, maybe 13, 14 years. Bring back Charles Xavier's reputation. Yeah, let's do that.
Nah, it's not interesting. Jonathan.
I would go ahead and say I would like to. I'm not sure if he's still dead or yet or not. But
repeat.
I want to see Gargoyle John come what? Back from the Defenders.
Or did he die? Hello.
Okay. I would bring back, I think, Gargoyle from the Defenders because, you know, I'm not sure if they did bring him back, but I've loved him in Defenders and New Defenders.
Not bad. Not bad at all. Okay.
I'm also trying to think who else.
Wait. Is it Gargoyle or just Gargoyle?
No, Gargoyle.
Oh, I was...
He was actually a pretty cool character. He, a good man, too.
Yeah.
Good, very good man.
He was like an 80-something-year-old man who got his soul stuck into a demon body.
Yeah.
And it was a pretty good, pretty tragic story, but he was a really good character.
That was also a very good run on Defenders. I'd recommend that for anybody who wants to read something. That had Beast, Angel, and Iceman in it too.
Uh huh. That's where I got hooked on and going into X Factor and got into, you know, all that from there.
I was reading
New Defenders. I would almost say Moondragon, but I know she's back somewhere. She's been back and dead a couple of times, I think.
Most of these people have.
Yeah, well, it's Marvel. What do you expect? Currently, that's currently dead. That I would like to see back. Oh, jeez. I can't keep track because half of them are back.
Jean Grey.
The real Jean Grey. Yeah, Jean I would Grey, like to see
the not dead. Whiny one.
Yeah.
Yes, the not whiny one.
The real Jean Grey, the one that would bitch slap her younger self and tell her to grow a pair.
Well, to be fair. Any one of us would try like to go back in time to bitch slap our younger selves occasionally.
That's true.
Yeah, I'd like
bitch slap my past selves so hard.
Angel, as in Warring Worthington. He became Archangel, the heir of became Apocalypse, and then he died.
Yeah, he did.
He did. Okay, and then the current Angel is like a.
It's his body, but he has no memories. Like it's basically not.
You know, I mean, he's amnesia. Right?
No, it's not. It's not. It's not the same. It's basically the old.
I can just say I would like to see Warring Worthington back.
Yeah.
I like
okay,
him.
That's fair, I guess.
Yeah. I would love, like you said, I would love to see Richard Rider back. That pissed me off when they killed him off. And, damn it, bring back the original Night Thrasher, you know. I love New Warriors back in the day. I don't know what the hell they did with them, but, you know, later on, but the classic Night Thrasher, New Warriors, I read that title, you know, from beginning to end.
Wayne was a good guy.
Yeah. And then, shit, who else? Non-Cape. Just for shits and grins, I agree. I would love to see Uncle Ben come back and then get shot, you know, at the end of the issue.
Aww.
Just to be an asshole. And I don't know what version of Aunt May they're back on, so I'm just going to leave that one alone.
Aunt May's still alive. She's the same one she's always been.
She was dead a long time ago, and then it turned out it was a actress, and she never died. And
she's right. That did happen, actually.
That ruined one of my favorite Spider-Man moments. You know, of course, the whole Clone Saga ruined a lot of Spider-Man stuff for me. But, jeez. I can't really think of anybody else.
How about this? Can we swap Uncle Ben with Aunt May? Seriously? Can we get that to happen?
Interesting idea. Interesting concept.
Come on. Aunt May has got to be the single longest living senior citizen in comics today. Not even Mrs. Grundy or Mr. Weatherby have got, you know, octogenarianism as, you know,
as
well
a superpower.
In check. Exactly. I mean, she's been old forever. Kill her ass. Spider-Man needs to grow past what he does. And to do that, fucking kill her. That's right. Aunt May needs to die.
Oh, no, these characters are changing. I don't recognize these characters anymore. Why are you changing them so much? Oh, no, you're changing them too much. Why are you changing them too much?
I'm not changing Aunt May. I'm killing her.
I'm talking about Spider-Man.
She should have been dead bang about 30 years ago after the 600th heart attack.
Well, that and having sex with Dr. Octopus.
Oh! Is Gwen Stacy alive right now?
No.
No, I think they killed that second clone of her.
Okay.
I think she died.
Huh.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
Well, in that case, bring her back and kill her again, too.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
But having sex with Osborn.
Or better yet, have sex with Ock.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Hentai, babies. Tentacles.
Oh, Jesus, no.
Oh, dear God. Okay, now that we're going into the dregs here, I honestly can't think of anybody else.
Living Lightning. I think he died late 90s, early 2000s. I think they killed him off, and I forgot what it was, but I think he's dead.
Damn, he was actually a decent character, even though people kept saying he was a stereotype, you know, just because he was Latino, you know.
Oh! I got another one.
What's that?
If only to see if he could redeem himself, I'd bring back J.T. Slade from Secret Warriors. I would want to see him brought back.
Who?
He's a character from Secret Warriors. You have to read the book. Yeah. He betrays the team, basically. So, but he wasn't an inherently evil. He wasn't an inherently evil guy.
And he got blackmailed more than anything else.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So,
I'd also
Fuck him, Brian. He should fucking stay there. He knew what the fuck he was doing.
I'd like to see Aaron come back.
Oh, but then what about Ares? Is he still dead?
Oh, Ares, fuck yes! Bring back Ares, the God of War. Oh my god. I'm sorry for the reaction. Okay, seriously, that period of time when Ares was on the Avengers. He was great. He was fucking fantastic. I loved Ares on those teams.
And if they could get the right writer and to keep his neuroses in check, I wouldn't mind seeing the Sentry come back. But he had to be done right.
He is back. Technically,
what he the is? Fuck?
Well, not alive. But Brian, you read Uncanny Avengers. He's in there.
Oh, that.
He's the Horseman of Apocalypse now.
I see.
So technically he is alive.
I was wrong. Living Lightning is alive.
Okay.
Miguel, what's his name? Yeah, he's not dead. I'm sorry, I was wrong.
Part of the Texas Tornadoes.
Yeah.
I thought that was the Rangers.
No, the Rangers.
Oh, okay, whatever. Texas Tornadoes is a wrestling tag team.
I never did find out during that whole 50 state initiative whether or not what Oklahoma's super team was.
They didn't get one.
Yeah, probably not.
What's there to protect? Not to be mean, but what's there to protect?
Hey, we have tornadoes that need to be protected from.
Okay.
And cows.
Libraries. And
Burger Kings.
Hey, let's bring back Wakanda, huh? We should bring them back all day.
Oh, the people of Wakanda?
Yeah.
All right, one more guess before we wrap it up.
Atlantis. Fuck Atlantis. They deserve to die.
Yeah. Anywhere.
What about that? What about that country that Ultron killed?
Oh,
you mean Houston, Texas?
Not Austin, Texas, by the way. No, I know what he's talking about. It's called Ultron. They did it in Ultron Unlimited. It was an Eastern European country. They actually talk about it in a original graphic novel that Warren Ellis did. So something happened, but I don't know what.
It's called Endless Wartime?
Yes.
Huh. I might have to check that out.
Because that was actually one of my favorite Ultron storylines, and I'm not a big Ultron fan.
Yes! Yes.
Because Busey and Perez.
It was Busey and...
Or George Perez.
Yeah, George Perez doing an Ultron story. It was pretty good. It's one of my favorites.
And one of my favorite lines, Ultron, we would have words with thee.
Yep.
Just Thor just looking like he's about to...
Oh, he whoops ass in that.
Uh-huh.
Oh, love it.
God, who else?
All right, so one more, and we'll wrap it up.
Ted Knight Starman. Woohoo!
That's DC, you dick.
You know, well, and it's really James Robinson. DC really can't touch Ted Knight.
Yeah. Okay, I got one. One final one to cap us off.
Go for it.
Bryan Singer's Victim's Innocence.
God fucking damn it! Oh my god. Okay, Mr. Singer, if you're listening to this, I truly apologize for the horribleness of my cohorts. God. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this fucking episode, because I'm about to fucking lose my shit with these guys.
Paul Walker and Manwich? I don't know.
Oh my god. Visit our website at thewarriors3.com. We're also on Facebook. Follow us on Facebook under The Warriors 3.
It's in the back door, y'all. Call.
I'm persevering. Twitter.com/Warriors3PCast. If you want to follow me, you can follow me at twitter.com/MarvelousIggy. Also follow my little blog that I do, MarvelousIggy.wordpress.com, where every week you get Scoreboard Mondays, Longbox Tuesdays, and Level Select Thursdays, as well as every Wednesday, whenever a Green Lantern issue comes out, you get a review of me. You get a review of a Green Lantern written by me. There you go. Y'all take it away, fucking hip, fucking
damn it. You can also... come and have some fun with us on Facebook, where John Bri, even A-Train and I, we try to supply some interesting and fun stuff on there. And, following this episode, I think we're going to see a whole lot more Bryan Singer stuff. Yes, indeed, we do.
As soon as I get off here, I'm going to probably get on my off my lazy ass tomorrow, and I'm going to start vlogging again. I'm going to try to do a review of the newer Fantastic Four, maybe do a vlog review of a Superior Spider-Man. It'll be Gamera Sith on YouTube. I'm also Gamera Sith on Facebook, along with my own Facebook. I will post the links when I get it done, and also put it on the Warriors 3 podcast Facebook page. And hopefully that'll be the beginning of me getting back off my lazy ass and, being, more productive again.
Yes, folks, you'll be able to see the grandpa of the Mighty Warriors 3.
Uh-huh. Oh, you're just jealous because I like Paul Walker better than you.
God. Okay, fuck it. We're done. We're fucking done.
I didn't get to plug my shit.
You don't get to plug shit, Mr. Singer.
Bryan Singer plugged his shit for you.
God. We will see y'all next week for episode number 164. These jokers are fired. God yes, damn it.
All new Warriors this way with A-Train and Johnny B.
This way to episode number 169. Bum 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 bum. Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream. Make him the cutest that I've ever seen. Give him the word that I'm not a rover. Then tell him that his lonesome nights are over, Sandman. I'm so alone, don't have nobody to call my own. Please turn on your magic beam, oh, Mr. Sandman.